The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's back to the United States, and while the Democrats flounder in opposition, as we discussed with Larry Donnelly in the last hour on the programme, the Republicans and Donald Trump are ploughing on with their agenda in a weekend that saw tariffs imposed, paused and threatened, a sign-off on shutting down the US International Development Agency, and today Donald Trump will meet with his first world leader since returning to office, one Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, to bring us fully up to date is Terry Sheridan, Director of News at WSHU Public Radio. Terry, good morning and welcome.
Hey, and thank you, Pat. Welcome. Good morning to you.
It's been an extraordinary weekend. We've been following it with great interest. And two interpretations of what happened. One is that Donald Trump threatened and won a particular battle. He forced people to make a deal. The other is that he saw the way the stock market was going and the implications of tariffs on Mexico and Canada, and he blinked.
And the second one is the one that's gaining most traction among ordinary people. Republicans are saying that he won, but people, the concessions that he got from both Mexico and Canada are relatively minor. They were based on plans that are already in effect, both to secure the border, to try to prevent illegal entry into the United States, and also to cut down on fentanyl trafficking. Those efforts were already in place. So he paused for 30 days and was able to move on.
Yeah, so the question is, why did he blink? Was it looking at the stock market? And I mean, the stock market is, if you like, the key indicator of all economic well-being in the United States.
It could be the stock market. It also didn't go down very well with economists in the nation, much less around the world. The Wall Street Journal called this the stupidest trade war in history that he was about to start. People were worried about what it was going to mean, especially farmers in the Midwest, where he runs very strong. It would hurt them, and it would hurt many Americans, many middle-class Americans, his supporters, when there's a 25% pay hike or a price hike on almost any good coming in from Mexico or Canada.
So he's backed out of this for 30 days at least with his nearest neighbors. The big question, and I don't understand why, tariffs threatened on China of 10% and 25% on his friends. Why did China appear to get off so lightly?
Well, on the one hand, he already has tariffs in effect against China from his first administration that were maintained through the Biden administration. The other one is, again, China is more of a rival, I will say, than either Mexico or Canada. So, again, he's probably playing it, you know, pretty safe, making a point. I guess naively not realizing that there would be some retaliation against these tariffs.
And Canadians who have been very good friends to America, I thought Justin Trudeau's comments over the weekend about Canada standing by America in its darkest hours, you know, whether it was in World War One, World War Two, or in Kandahar, the Canadians were there. And this is what they got in exchange.
And again, there's been a traditionally close relationship between the United States and Canada. Canada was also very helpful in the days after 9/11. But again, a turning point, the National Hockey League, ice hockey is a big sport in both the United States and in Canada. And it's something that they share. The National Hockey League has teams from both countries. When the American National Anthem has been played over the past few days in Canada, it's been loudly booed.
I think possibly what got up the noses of a lot of Canadians was the notion that they would become the 51st state. Not that Canada might perhaps become the 51st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th states of the United States, but all of Canada would become one state as part of the United States. I mean, that's a kind of demeaning concept.
Oh, absolutely. And again, yes, you are absolutely correct. And it's interesting, or it's curious to know, I guess is a better way of putting it, what the ultimate goal is in that. Is it to get some sort of subservience from Canada? Is Donald Trump actually thinking of annexing Canada? Because on the one hand, you know, he's talking about Greenland, he's talking about Canada, and people are like, why? And then if you look at a map, you would see that would give him control control of the entire Western Hemisphere access to the Arctic Ocean and the Arctic Circle. But is that just a pipe dream, or is that something he's actually considering?
Now, it's interesting that China has retaliated, and it might seem as if, you know, that it's a self-inflicted wound. If you impose tariffs on farm machinery from the United States, on LNG imports and on coal, you know, because fuel is hugely important to the Chinese. They have huge reserves of coal, but they obviously haven't managed to exploit them all. So they've been importing. But they have alternative suppliers. Russia will supply oil, gas and coal. Indonesia will supply. Australia is supplying. I mean, they're not going to hurt themselves. They'll just find other ways of fueling their economy without American energy. So who does that hurt? The American producers, not the Chinese.
Right, it hurts the American people. And that was one of the things that was pointed out over the weekend by economists, is that China has other options. And also, China can just stop buying things that were not, you know, involved in this tariff. What happens if China stops buying American soybeans? Well, they'll get it elsewhere. They'll get it from Russia. They'll get it from somewhere else. The other thing, though, that's interesting with China is that they've banned the export of critical minerals that are very much needed for high-tech computers, devices, phones, et cetera. And they're going after Google, criminally investigating Google. I mean, the search engine YouTube is not available in China, but the Android system is. So, again, we'll see where that goes.
Okay, so that's charges of market dominance, which, of course, is almost demonstrably true in the case of Google. It's so pervasive. We use the term, I'll Google that. We don't say I'll search engine that. We say I'll Google it. So anyway, let's move on to the U.S. Agency for International Development. And we played a clip earlier from Elon Musk saying, you know, an apple with a worm. But when you come to an organization like USAID, it's like it's all made of worms. So you can't take the worm out. You've got to destroy the whole thing. We'll have a listen to what Trump had to say about USAID.
It's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out, and then we'll make a decision.
Okay, so Elon Musk flexing his muscles, his unelected muscles, although he has been given a part-time job now by the administration.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, again, not only USAID, which he says is criminal and has to die, and has already started a purge of that organization. It's been put under the direct control right now of Secretary of State Marco Rubio. An administrator has also been named, Pete Maricocco, who was from the first Trump administration. And their goal is to basically destroy it. And then rebuild it in the way that they want to. Rubio says that it has to conform to U.S. foreign policy, and administrators who were fired or put on leave were done so because of insubordination, because they didn't follow President Trump's thoughts and plans and orders.
Now, other extraordinary things said that about USAID, I mean, people didn't really know in America what it did. Where it's active. And it's an example, I suppose, of soft power. And this is what Ilhan Omar, the Democratic representative, said at a press conference outside the headquarters of USAID.
I lived in a refugee camp for 4 years as a child surviving civil war. It is the essential programs that USAID provided that kept my family and I fed and safe. It is the resources that so many people around the world rely on. And it is our soft power. Oftentimes, people interact with our country through the military. That does not create love for us, and it certainly does not keep us safe. When the world interacts with Americans through programs that provide essential need, they get to see the heart and compassion of the American people. Right. What Trump and Elon and all of their cronies are trying to do is take away the constitutional power of Congress. We get to decide. We have the power of the purse. We get to decide where money is allocated, and it's the executive's power to make sure that that money gets to where it needs to get.
And that it was a very powerful contribution from Ilhan Omar. Now, it's interesting that there doesn't seem to be a broad understanding of what USAID AID does, but there is a broad understanding of what the FBI does. And this perhaps is the most sinister development of all, that they are interrogating FBI people who are, may have been involved in investigating the January the 6th insurrection on the Capitol. Every one of them has got to answer 12 questions in a questionnaire to determine whether or not they're going to keep their jobs.
Absolutely. And the other, again, the whole thing with the FBI is, one, there has been, and they call it a purge. The Trump administration calls it a purge. Now, obviously, we're not talking a purge in the sense of the Soviet Union, but they are purging top management. They're going down that next level to interrogate and investigate those who were investigating January 6th. And the fear is that that investigation is going to go down to another level to American citizens who were election officials in 2020, as they try to make the case, they try to prove a point that somehow the 2020 election was tainted and stolen from Donald Trump. So
the incoming director, if he gets confirmation, Kash Patel, said was stolen from Donald Trump. He's also a guy who you can't really have any. He promised that there would be no purge, but the purge is already underway even before he takes office. So
the purge,
go figure.
Yeah, no, the purge is underway, and the fear is that it's going down to election workers, you know, that you might get a knock on your door, and it would be the FBI, you know, asking everything about what happened in the days before and the days after that election. In America, it's interesting. You can lie to the police, but it is a felony to lie to the FBI. So people will be like, well, what do I say? Am I going to be caught in a perjury trap here? So that's a very disconcerting development.
Is it a felony to lie to a Senate confirmation hearing? Because clearly RFK did. It's demonstrable when he said he'd never made the claim about autism and vaccination, and there's lots of video showing that he did. Kash Patel, lots of video saying what he said and where he was and what he believed, and he denied it all.
If Congress, if the Senate decides that he committed perjury, yes, there could be charges, but I think it's very unlikely that they'll bring perjury charges against any of them.
To what extent, Terry, do you think American people are waking up to what is going on here, that this is in effect a coup in plain sight?
I think it's always been among Democrats or those who are liberal. It's always been something that's there. It's been a fear. I think Americans are waking up. Not so much that it's a coup but all of a sudden, wait a minute, this is not what you said, you know, or we didn't think you were going to do this that would hurt us. We voted for you and now you're doing something that's hurting us. I think the opposition right now, and you refer to it when you're speaking to Larry, I think that the opposition right now is pretty demoralized, and they don't know what to do to resist what's going on with the Trump administration.
The other outrage, I suppose, is Elon Musk getting access to the Treasury payment system. I mean, who is he to have that access?
Well, not so much who is he. Who is he? But who is the people he's bringing in? I mean, they have access to the Treasury payment system. They have access to a lot of things. There's concerns now that the Treasury payment system may be, or the data from that may be, on a private server somewhere. Elon Musk is technically a part-time employee of the United States or the executive branch strictly an advisory role. The fact that he's gone in with a team that are loyal to him and have accessed many records of interest to Americans, their Social Security payments. While he doesn't yet have tax records, he does know who paid taxes and he does know who received tax rebates based on what he's got from the Treasury Department.
There's a journalist called Garrett Graff who decided to have a look, if he could, take himself away from the intimacy with which he's familiar with the U.S. situation and see if all of this unfolded in a foreign jurisdiction, what would be written by American journalists. And the headline is Musk junta seizes key government offices. And it goes on to talk about all the things that he did. With a rapidity that has stunned even longtime political observers, forces loyal to Musk's junta have established him as the all but undisputed unelected head of the government in just a matter of days. And it goes on to refer to Trump as a mid-level oligarch.
Well, again, look at the language that Elon Musk used when he's talking about USAID. Most people who report to the president of the United States would say, I agree with the president. This agency needs to be reformed, and if it can't, it needs to be shut down. Musk said, the president agrees with me that this agency needs to be shut down.
Yeah, I saw one commentator, a Democratic commentator, saying that he can almost smell the melting wax from the wings of Elon Musk as he flies too close to the sun like Icarus. Anyway, Terry, finally, Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington to meet with President Trump. First world leader, if you'll pardon the term, to meet with Donald Trump. With what view do you think? Is it to redraw the map of the Middle East like Trump wants to do? And Bibi also?
Well, it's interesting because, again, while they are very much in agreement over this first ceasefire, they are in disagreement about what to do next. Donald Trump wants the war to end immediately, but Netanyahu wants the war to end when Hamas is defeated. So the thinking is Netanyahu is going to try to not extend the war, but, you know, extend the different phases in the 3-point ceasefire until Hamas can be ousted from Gaza. There's also going to be discussions about Iran's nuclear program and normalizing relationships with Saudi Arabia. But there is a little tension between Netanyahu and Trump, but it is telling that Netanyahu is the first to visit Trump in the White House.
No doubt they'll be discussing real estate opportunities on the Gaza Strip as well, based on Trump's earlier comments.
Exactly.
Terry, thank you very much for joining us. And that's Terry Sheridan, Senior Director of News at WSHU Public Radio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.